Here we join the Kratons, who look a little like whales. They are telepathic and a long-lived race who do not mind our coming and mentally connecting with them for a while. Occasionally, they gather at certain locations to telepathically communicate with intelligent aquatic life forms who exist on two other planets, around stars in the galactic vicinity of Anchurium. What I love about this place is the unity and harmony of thought with the Kratons, which rejuvenates my mind and reminds me of my original planet. Apparently, the Kratons have the ability to project their minds as beacons of unified thought away from Anchurium to other worlds by knowing the points of confluence in the magnetic energy belt around their planet. These vortex areas, similar to the ley lines of Earth discussed in Chapter 4, seem to give the Kratons' telepathic power a boost and serve as conduits to better interstellar communication. From this case and hundreds of others, I have come to the conclusion that everything on Earth and in the universe is apparently connected by thought waves to and from the spirit world. This may also be true for other dimensions near us as well. The multiple progression of intelligence with all elements of matter represents a symphony of order and direction based upon a plan of universal consciousness. In the last chapter, I explained how some recreational games are used as training vehicles for the souls attracted to exploration. The more adept engage in interdimensional travel. One of my explorer trainee clients said to me, "I was told that to become an explorer I would have to experience many realities by beginning my travels to physical worlds, and then escalating to the mental existences and interdimensional travel. In order to acquaint the reader with interdimensional life, I have chosen the strange case of a client from Japan who told me in deep hypnosis that his soul was originally from another dimension. His spiritual name is Kano." Case 61. Kano is a Japanese scientist who, years ago, came to the US for his advanced education. Today he prefers a life of relative isolation in laboratories. He suffers from a poor immune system, a common complaint among hybrid soul clients. These people are negatively influenced by too little experience with the human body and too many alien imprints carried over from their former existences. As I have said, it may take the hybrid soul many generations of earthly incarnations before a complete memory cleansing of old body energy patterns will take place. I began our session in my customary fashion, by regressing Kano to the time when he was inside his mother's womb. This is a good place for a spiritual regressionist to start interacting with a client's soul. While inside his mother, my subject reported that he had trepidations about his coming birth stemming from his one prior life on Earth some 300 years ago in India. I continued the regression to Kano's death scene in India and then we crossed into the spirit world. I will pick up the dialogue with Kano when he meets his guide, Finnis. "Dr. N, what does Finnis say to you?" "S," she says, "welcome back. How did you like the ride?" "Dr. N, and what is your response?" "S, did it have to be so terrible?" "Dr. N, does she agree with your assessment of life in India?" "S, Finnis reminds me that I volunteered to have a difficult opening life on F.Earth because I wanted to receive the full impact of a disruptive planet. I was the poorest of the poor in India and lived in squalor." "Dr. N, did you want to suffer this much in your initial life?" "S, the life was terrible and I didn't handle it well. When a childless family took my daughter against my will by paying the owner of the shack where I lived, I became so distraught I could not function." Kano jerks in his chair and emotionally relives the moments after his last death. "What kind of a planet is this anyway? People selling children." "Dr. N, at this point I do not yet know about Kano's hybrid origins and I make a wrong assumption. This does seem as though it was a very difficult first incarnation for a new soul on Earth." "S, who said one was a new soul?" "Dr. N, I'm sorry, Kano. One just assumed that right now you are only in your second incarnation on Earth." "S, that's true, but I'm from another dimension." "Dr. N, startled, oh, then what can you tell me about this other dimension?" "S, we have no physical worlds as you have in this dimension. My incarnations were on the mental world." "Dr. N, What did you look like on this world? S. I had an elongated, flowing body, spongy, with no skeletal structure. We were rather transparent forms of silvery light. Dr. N. Did you prefer a certain type of gender? S. We were all hermaphrodites. Dr. N. Cano, please explain the difference between traveling to the dimension of your origins from the spirit world as opposed to coming into our universe. S. In my dimension, movement is like going through soft, translucent filaments of light. Coming into your universe is like plowing through thick, heavy, moisture-laden fog. Dr. N. And being on Earth for the first time, what was that like compared to your home world? S. Having concrete tied to your feet. The first thing you notice is the heavy weight of the dense energy here compared to a mental world. Pause. It isn't just heavy, it's coarse, severe. I was really jolted in that life in India. Dr. N. Is all this a little better now? Are you becoming acclimatized? S. Without confidence, to some extent. It's still pretty difficult, Dr. N. I can see that. Cano, what is the most troubling aspect about the human brain for you? S. Abruptly, it's the impulsive behavior, the physical reaction to things, without analytical thought. There is danger in connecting with the wrong kind of human being, too. Treachery, I can't deal with this. Dr. N. Cano is sweating profusely and I quiet him now a bit before continuing. Tell me about your mental world. Does it have a name? S. Pause. It's a sound which I can't recreate with my voice. Begins reminiscing. We float in a sea of gentle mental currents. Soft, playful, so unlike Earth. Dr. N. Then why come here? S. With a deep sigh. I am studying to be an explorer teacher. Most of my associates are satisfied to confine their efforts to one dimension. I finally told Furness I wanted broader experience with a hard world in a completely different zone of existence. She told me she had a senior colleague who recommended another dimension with a strenuous physical world that had a reputation for producing vigorous, insightful souls. With a gallows laugh, once you survive the lessons. This was Earth. Dr. N. Did you get the impression there were other choices open to you? S. Shrugs. Guides don't give you many choices in such situations. Finnis said that when I completed my work on Earth I would be strengthened in ways my friends who refused such assignments would not be. She said Earth would also be quite interesting and I accepted that. Dr. N. Did any of your friends come with you into our dimension? S. No, I was the only one who elected to go and I almost refused to return again in this life. My associates think I am very brave. They know if I make it, I'm going to be an effective traveler. Dr. N. Let's talk about travel, Cano. As an interdimensional traveler, you probably know if there is a finite number of dimensions around our physical universe. S. Flatly, I do not know. Dr. N. Cautiously. Well, is your home dimension next to ours? S. No, I must pass through three other dimensions to get here. Dr. N. Cano, it would be helpful if you would try and describe what you see as you pass through these dimensions you are familiar with in your travels. S. The first dimension is a sphere full of colors and violent explosions of light, sound and energy. I think it is still forming. The next is black and empty, we call it the unused sphere. Then there is a beautiful dimension which has both physical and mental worlds composed of gentle emotion, tender elements and keen thought. This dimension is superior to my original dimension and your universe as well. Dr. N., it's now your universe too, Cano. Tell me, does the trip through the total of four dimensions take long? S. No, quickly. Like air particles passing through a filter. Dr. N., can you give me a sense of the structural design between these dimensions in relation to the spirit world? You described the dimensions as spheres. Why don't we start with that? S. Long pause, I can't tell you much. Everything is, in a circle around the center of the spirit world. Each of these universes appears to me to be an interlocking sphere with the next. As in a chain. Dr. N, after failing to gain more information, how are you getting on in our universe now, Kano? S, rubbing his hand on his forehead, better. I am learning how to discharge my energy in a steady, positive stream without depleting my reserve. It helps me to be away from people for long periods. I expect to really improve after a few more lives, but I am looking forward to completing my time here on Earth. Before leaving the realm of the Explorer Soul, I should add that this sort of training involves learning about the texture of intelligent energy. I am frustrated in not being able to discover more about the properties of this energy in motion on mental worlds. Some information comes to me from those souls who have had experience on physical worlds which are also considered mental, as demonstrated by the following condensed quote: "We visit the volcanic gas world of Cryon to learn by assimilation. It is a mental world with outward physical attributes. Our group of explorers float as blobs of fluid energy in a sea of gaseous substances. We are metamorphic and able to change shape and form into the tiny beings whose life is centered around pure thought. There is absolute vibrational uniformity here, unlike Earth." Souls who travel interdimensionally explain that their movements appear to be in and out of curved spheres connected by zones that are opened and closed by converging vibrational attunement. Explorer trainees have to learn this skill. From the accounts one have heard, the interdimensional travelers must also learn about the surface boundaries of zones connecting universes as hikers locating trailheads between mountain ranges. Souls speak of points, lines and surfaces in multispace which indicate larger structural solids, at least for the physical universes. I would think dimensions having geometric designs need hyperspace to hold them. Yet explorer souls travel so fast in some sort of hyperspace, it seems to me the essence of speed, time and direction of travel is hardly definitive. Training to be an explorer must indeed be formidable, as indicated by this quote from a client who travels through five dimensions between her lives. These dimensions are meshed with one another so that I have no sense of boundaries except for two elements, sound and color. With sound, I must learn to attune my energy to the vibrational frequency of each dimension, and some are so complex I cannot yet go to them. With color, the purples, blues, yellows, reds and whites are manifestations of light and density for those energy particles in the dimensions where I travel. 9. The Ring of Destiny, the screening room of future lives. The place of future life selection is seen as a sphere containing highly concentrated force fields of glowing energy screens. As I mentioned in the section on spiritual libraries, the place of life selection has been characterized as the Ring of Destiny, where we first behold our next body. Most subjects see the ring as a circular, domed theater with floor-tousling panoramic screens which surround them completely while they are situated in a shadowed viewing area. Some people see the screens as being on two or three sides while they stand or sit on a raised deck. From this observation deck, souls can look up, straight ahead or down at the screens that are huge compared to what is seen in the other learning centers of the spirit world. The ring displays futuristic scenes of events and people the soul will encounter in the life to come. Some clients have commented that each screen reflects scenes of childhood, adolescence, adulthood, and old age of the bodies they are reviewing, while others say that all the screens show them the same scene at one time. The whole spiritual structure of the screening room is designed to give the viewer an ability either to observe or participate in the action, just as in libraries. It does seem to me that more people elect to enter the screens of the ring during life selection than with the screens in the other learning centers. They want to actually experience snippets of future events in certain bodies before making any final decisions. The preference to enter a scene or just observe is always left up to the individual soul. As with the smaller consoles, the ring also has what appears to be control panels or lever bars to monitor the action. People call this procedure scanning the timelines, and the more advanced tell me they can control the array of events in front of them with their minds. The sequence of events can, to some extent, be regulated in stop action for parts of a future life the soul may wish to consider more carefully. I cannot stress too much that all my subjects feel what they are seeing has been edited for their benefit and that they have less control over what they can watch than, say, in the library. Moreover, I have the impression that when looking into the future, they see more of an early life than later. This may be due to bias in reporting since those years are already over by the time I see the client. The key viewing years of a new life seem to be between 8 and 20, when the first major forks in life begin to emerge. Many people tell me they are shown certain years in great detail while other parts of their future life are completely left out. The control panels seem to be of no use here, yet this never bothers my subjects. I believe their current amnesia also plays a part. As one 49-year-old man explained, I was shown my current body at ages 4, 16, and 28, but I think I am now being blocked from recalling what I saw afterwards. During viewing, the screens ebb and flow like a film of water. One woman used a suitable metaphor to represent her feelings about the experience when she said, "As the screens come alive, they resemble a three-dimensional underwater aquarium. When I look at a life, it's like taking a deep breath and going underwater. People, places, events, everything floats by you in a flash before your eyes as if you are drowning. Then you come back to the surface. When you are actually sampling a scene from the life they show you, it reflects the time a person is able to stay underwater." In many ways, uncovering the memories my subjects have about their last experience in the life selection room and their interpretations as to body choice is one of the most therapeutic and informative aspects of my hypnosis sessions. My clinical work is greatly enhanced when a client returns to the ring because of the relevancy to their current life. By offering the reader a more comprehensive picture of this process, I hope to bring a greater appreciation of the importance of each life we select in our cycle of lives. This chapter contains one final soul specialty that I will add to my list. These are the Time Masters, who are coordinators engaged with past, present and future timelines of people and events. Time Masters are the highly adroit experts who give the impression of actually directing the presentations in our theater in the round. These master souls are members of an entire fellowship of planners that include guides, archivists and council elders, who are involved with designing our future. A large percentage of my subjects never see Time Masters in the screening room. Some clients feel they are alone in the ring except for a projectionist. Others will enter the ring with a personal guide, or perhaps an elder, who is the only advisor they are aware of helping them during life selection. In terms of our own input, many souls have already organized their thoughts about the next reincarnation. Our guides and council members have helped refine these thoughts with questions about what we think our next life should be about and the type of human being that might best suit us. Still, we are not really prepared for the choices offered to us once we entered the life selection room. There is a sense of wonder and even some apprehension for the average soul. The Time Masters of the Ring seem to be shadowy figures in the background who may be consulted by those guides who accompany us to the viewing areas. Even if they are seen, my clients are not inclined to communicate with them during observations. This is why my next case is atypical. Case 62, Dr. N, please give me a picture of what takes place as you enter the sphere of life selection. S, there are two beings who come forward to work with my guide, Fiam. He seems to know them well. Dr. N, do you see them in this place before every new life? S, no, only when the next life is going to be particularly difficult, which means a number of hard body choices. Dr. N, do you mean more body choices than usual, or more complex individual bodies? S. Usually I get only a couple of body choices and that makes it easier for me. Dr. N, do you know the names of these two specialists who talk to Fiam? S. Jerks in chair, never. That's just not something I would know. There isn't any easy familiarity here with these masters of time, that's why Fiam is with me. Dr. N, I understand. So do your best, Lo, give me an idea of what these Time Masters of your life offerings are like. S. More relaxed now, okay. Number one is masculine appearing and he is rigorous in his demeanor. I know he is inclined toward having me choose a certain body, the one which will be the most useful. This body will give me the maximum experience I need in my future life. Dr. N. O. From all I have heard, the ring directors are rather quiet, unobtrusive beings. S. Well, yes, that's true. But during the choosing, there is always a preferred body choice that the planners feel is best. This body is given a prominent presentation. Pause. Everyone knows this is the first time I have seen these choices, and they want my choice to be fruitful. Dr. N. So I have heard. Why don't you tell me about number two? S. Smiling, she is feminine and softer, more flexible. She wants me to accept the body which will be pleasurable to be inside. She leans to moderation and turns to one and says there is plenty of time to learn my lessons. I have the feeling there is a deliberate juxtaposition between them for my benefit. Dr. N. Sort of like the good cop, bad cop routine during an interrogation? S. Laughs, yeah, maybe, so I will have an advocate in both camps with Fiam taking the middle road. Dr. N. So Fiam is kind of a referee? S. No, that's not true. Fiam is neither lenient nor severe in attitude as I deliberate my choices. It is made clear to me that the body choice is mine alone because I am going to have to live with it. A burst of laughter. Hey, I made a pun. Dr. N., I think you did. We really do have to live with our choices. Why don't you explain what choosing the body you had in your last life was all about before we go further? S., in my last life, I chose a difficult path with the body of a woman who would die within 2 years of marriage. My husband in that life needed to feel the loss of someone he loved deeply for a karmic debt from the life before. Dr. N., so there was a high probability that this particular body was going to die young, and the main question was, would you be the soul who would elect to choose that body? S. Yes, that's about it. Dr. N. Well, please go on and tell me the circumstances surrounding your death as a young woman in that life. S. In the screening room I had three choices of death during a narrow time span involving my life on a ranch near Amarillo, Texas. I could die quickly from a stray bullet during a gunfight between two drunken men. I could die more slowly after a fall from a bucking horse. And I could die by drowning in a river. Dr. N., was there any chance you might live? S. Pause, a slight one, but that would defeat the purpose of my joining with that body. Dr. N., which was what? S. My soulmate and I chose to be husband and wife on this ranch because he needed the lesson. I rejected the other body choices. I came to help him. Dr. N., tell me what was on your mind as you looked at the three choices in the screening room. S. I chose the bullet, naturally. The manner of my death was not about these choices as much as the meaning behind my dying young. The reader may wonder about the connection of the laws of karma to future possibilities and probabilities. Karma does not only pertain to our deeds, it is internal as well, reflecting our thoughts, feelings and impulses, all relating to cause and effect. Karma is more than taking proper actions toward others, it is also having the intention to do so. While the timeline for the Amarillo woman had a high probability of being short, her early death was not chiseled in stone. One of the variables here was the type of soul that would occupy that particular body. Even with the soul who elected to take this body anticipating a short life, there were elements of free will to be considered. I learned that it was not 100% ordained that this woman would die young by the stray bullets that hit her while she was standing across the street from the saloon where the gunfight took place. When I asked if she might have avoided going into Amarillo for supplies that day, my client said, yes, but something impelled me to go into town right when I did, and I almost didn't go without knowing why. Another soul might not have gone at the last minute without knowing why either. Timelines and body choices. Although time has little relevance outside our physical universe, We see ourselves and everything around us aging each day. We live on a planet around a star, which is also constantly aging in chronological time. The cycle of life involves movement of time, and the timelines of our dimensional reality appear to be influenced by advanced beings who allow reincarnating souls to study the past and see into the future. In libraries and spiritual learning centers, we can view other possible actions we might have taken in former lives to explore the what-ifs of our past. Under the doctrine of free will, the events of the past were not inevitable any more than our actions within those events. Fate does not decree that a certain situation has to come out a particular way. We are not puppets on a string. In our universe, when the past is over, these events and the people involved with them become eternal and are forever preserved in spiritual libraries. Since past, present and future in chronological time represent now time in the spirit world, how is future time treated in the Ring of Life selection? In Chapter 5, following case 30.1 postulated on the many possibilities for the same event existing in parallel universes. In physical universes, this hypothesis means planets such as Earth could be duplicated within the same time frames and exist simultaneously as moving particle waves of light energy. Universes might be parallel, superimposed coexisting realities within the same dimension, or something else inconceivable. Regardless of the spatial layout, from the true reality of the spirit world, time and events are tracked, stopped, and moved forward and backward by examiners of Earth. The major trunk lines, which I call baselines, are the probabilities of future events in certain bodies presented as possibilities for our examination in the ring. The waves of past events still indelibly exist, as in spiritual libraries, but if the present and future also exist in now time, how can the future be changed when the past is not? Is this an impossible paradox? In quantum mechanics, particles of light seem to vanish at one point and reappear instantaneously in another place. If each event in time exists along wave-like ripples of probabilities and possibilities, is it likely that a past event is given certain eternal properties where future events are still fluid and open to change? My strong feeling is yes. However, after years of listening to people explain about their life choices, I do not believe future alternatives are unlimited in number. There is no need for our choices in life to be infinite. These possibilities only have to be varied enough for us to learn from the lessons. For example, in case 29, Amy indicated to me from a past life review in the library that her alternative choices to suicide began to fall off the chart of possibilities after a while. The planners deal in the what-ifs of our lives. Events which have not yet taken place in the grand scheme of things are known by Time Masters and others for their greater or lesser potential of happening. We do not simply study alternate timelines of future events in the ring. Rather, we examine the alternative bodies offered us that will exist within those events. These bodies will be born into roughly the same time frames. Watching the most probable series of events linked to those bodies under consideration is like previewing advance promotional scenes from a movie. As they view specific scenes of what the Time Masters want them to see, some souls feel they are playing a chess game where they don't yet know all the possible moves available for a desired ending. Usually, souls look at parts of a future life on a baseline, or ringline, as some clients call it. The ring line represents the greatest probable course of a life for each body examined. The soul preparing for incarnation knows that one chess move, 1 minute change in the game they are watching, could alter the outcome. I find it intriguing that most of the time souls are not shown any in-depth probable future outcomes. They know there are many other possible moves on the chessboard of life which can change at any moment of play. Frankly, this is what makes the game interesting for most souls. Changes in life are conditional on our free will toward a certain action. This causality is part of the laws of karma. Karma is opportunity, but it also involves fortitude and endurance, because the game will bring setbacks and losses along with personal victories. Reports of what goes on in these screening rooms are very consistent between hypnosis subjects. Their affirmations of what they all see boggle the mind. Still, while in the ring, people are not able to view events into the future beyond the next immediate lifespan of the bodies presented to them. Evidently, this might cloud the way souls see the lives they are viewing.